like an angel. Skin makes me cry. You float like a feather in a beautiful world. I wish I was special. You're so fucking special. But I'm a creep.
Listening to Unspooled Real on GotchMovies.com. I'm Ryan Oliver.
And I'm Jenny Knoll.
How's it going today, Jenny?
Well, my voice is kind of almost gone. But other than that, I've just been really tired all day because the only amount of sleep I got was on a plane.
Yeah, 3 hours. I don't know. It wasn't,
it was like,
I don't know.
Four, but... I think. They said on the plane it was 2 hours and 46 minutes. And I was like, I don't think they're reading the time correctly. They might be tired as well. I think it's like around 4 hours.
That's still way too early to fly and not enough sleep. So I apologize.
Oh, no. No big deal.
So I guess before we get into our review, what have you been checking out this week, if anything?
Oh, well, I did watch a lot of things, because me and the friend I went to go visit in New York City, she loves movies and TV shows like me. So when we were not going out, we watched the whole first season, or only potentially season, of Wet Hot American Summer.
Nice.
Then we watched Wet Hot American Summer. And we also went to go see this movie called Phoenix.
I've heard of it, but I have not. I don't know a lot about it.
Oh, it's so good. It's this post-World War II movie about a woman who a bullet wound like messes up her face, and she has to go get facial reconstruction surgery. And so she has her same face, but it's kind of a little bit different. And so when she goes to see her husband, he doesn't recognize her, and he just thinks that this is a woman that looks just like her. And he tries to play her off as his wife, even though it is his wife. And she kind of tries to hint to him the whole time, I really am your wife. But long story short, basically the whole movie, you're trying to figure out if he sold her out to the Nazis or not.
Oh, that sounds fascinating.
Oh my God, it was so intense.
I'll check that out whenever it opens in my neck of the woods, I guess.
If it opens. It was only in 4 theaters this weekend, and I have a feeling it's going to be one of those ones that has an extremely painfully slow rollout. So that's why when I was in New York City, I told my friend, I was like, I really want to see this. I don't want to wait like 2 months to see this.
Yeah, that's unfortunate if it does have a slow rollout. But hey, I mean, August is a pretty slow month, so hopefully we'll get some of those interesting indies to expand. I know the end of the tour is already expanding next week, at least to Seattle, so I'm looking forward to that.
Oh, yeah, it's expanding to Austin as well next week.
Nice.
Yeah, but that one's A24, so they roll out pretty well with their movies, except for Dark Places, which we were discussing earlier.
Yeah, I don't know what's going on with the marketing of that movie. It's like you have a Gillian Flynn, and it stars Charlize Theron, and like they're just hiding the fact that it's coming out, and it's really weird.
Yeah, and there's Nicholas Hoult, Chloe Moretz. Like, it's a pretty stellar cast for the fact that I just finished the book today. It's not that great of a book. And we were talking about it, and you said you didn't like it that much either, and that's why you kind of stopped reading it.
Yeah, it was just okay. It just wasn't like compelling for me to keep reading, and I'll probably see the film because Charlize Theron's one of my favorite actresses, but I'm not like super thrilled to see it by any means.
The crazy thing is how different she is, like at least in appearance, from the character in the book, who's like supposed to be short, like really thin, but with these like huge porn star breasts is like literally what she calls them, I think once or twice. And then red hair, and Charlize Theron is like tall, lanky, skinny, blonde hair. Like almost the opposite of what the character is described in the book.
It makes no sense. It makes no sense.
No.
For me, I saw Ant-Man, which was against my will, but ended up actually enjoying it. I actually enjoyed it more than the person who drugged me to go see it did. So I thought that was kind of interesting.
Oh, that is really interesting. I didn't even know that part.
Yeah. Well, yeah. A buddy of mine, he's just like, I kind of want to go. People are telling me it's good. And I was like, I don't know. I don't really want to see it. And, but then I just had a day off and I was already headed down south to meet my dad for the weekend. And I was like, you know what? All right, fine. I'll go see it with you. I'll kill some time. It's really hot. So fine. We'll go see a movie. And, yeah, I actually ended up really enjoying it. I laughed a lot. It's, you know, it's a basic origin story and it's got Marvel movie problems, like a weak villain, like most of the movies, and a villain with the same powers as the hero, which is also really not interesting. But Paul Rudd in the role of Scott Lang, he can do no wrong. And he made the movie for me and I thoroughly enjoyed it. Same with some of the set pieces I thought were pretty entertaining.
I do like Paul Rudd a lot. I really do like him. And I thought he was okay in the movie. I think the third act is really good in Ant-Man, but I just feel like the first two acts aren't so good. And so here's what I think Marvel should do. They should just pull the first two acts from Iron Man, pull the last act from Ant-Man, and then make that movie.
Yes. I would agree.
Find a good villain. Oh, put Loki in.
Yeah. To be fair. I mean, even though, again, you know, the story beat by beat pretty much for the, like, you know, what's going to happen with the character. But I found it funny. Like, I thought Michael Pena was absolutely hilarious. I liked the, like, kind of test heist thing that was, for him to become Ant-Man, and his training montage scene, I thought was like funny. And the character that he fights that they smartly hid from the advertisement, I thought was entertaining as well. So overall, it's one of the better Marvel movies for my money anyway, but I know we would disagree.
The character he fights that they smartly hid in the advertising. Yeah. No, that part was really great. And actually I believe that is one of the, I heard a rumor that it's probably one of the scenes that Edgar Wright left over because they wanted to put it in. And then he was like, no, I don't want that scene in my movie, but it's actually one of my favorite scenes in the movie.
And I can understand him not wanting to do that because he was looking to make a movie of just Ant-Man. Mm-hmm. And I understand, but you know, Marvel has to connect these dots together. So I understand it, but I get where Edgar Wright would be coming from as well. Go ahead.
Oh yeah. I just thought it was interesting that it was like a part I really enjoyed, and yet somehow it might have also possibly been the reason why the director that probably could have made it a little bit snappier, at least far as direction goes, left. So I just thought that was interesting.
That's a shame. That's like the one bad thing about the movie, other than the like other normal Marvel problems, is like thinking of what Edgar Wright's movie could be.
You can also tell like some of the scenes that you're like, oh, this was his idea.
I agree. Like, because I remember you saying that on our last episode, but I also, my theory is that if you're going to rip somebody off, at least rip somebody off who's got an amazing visual style. Because it's still, I thought, visually more interesting than a lot of the Marvel Cinematic Universe films. So
a very good point.
Yeah. So that was my two cents. And other than that, I saw Mission Impossible Rogue Nation, which, just like the other movies, enjoyed a whole hell of a lot. It's Tom Cruise doing real stunts and running away from the law and trying to clear his name. That's basically what it is, and it was great for it.
Isn't that like every Tom Cruise movie in a nutshell?
Maybe not every Tom Cruise
movie. Not every one, but every recent one.
Well, every Mission Impossible movie, for sure. He's always branded a terrorist or something. For the most part.
It's like, and then something goes wrong, and then they have to go rogue. So I thought it was kind of actually amusing that they called it Rogue Nation, when it's like, oh, doesn't he do that? Like, basically every movie.
Yeah, and I'm still disappointed that it did not take place in the Rogue Brewery in Newport, Oregon. I was really upset about that.
Damn it.
Come on. I think that's their slogan as a company, is they're the Rogue Nation. So I'm like, wait, does this movie take place in Newport? but it didn't happen. I will say, and I know you haven't seen it yet, but the one thing, too, to take away from the movie is this actress, Rebecca Ferguson, is fantastic in it, and she needs her own movie stat. That's
what she's a redhead ish auburn hair.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. I was like, not a total redhead, but yeah, that's her.
Okay, cool. I am excited. I really want to see it. I love the fourth one. I actually haven't seen the first, third, and second. In that order as well. Obviously, it would be first, second, or third. But no, I actually haven't seen them. I never heard any good things about two and three enough to come. Well, Lila loves three.
So. Yeah, three is my favorite as well. I would agree with Lila. Mainly because three has the best villain, too. That's one thing. The Mission Impossible movies, I have to say, like, as great as their practical stunts is and their humor and, like, Tom Cruise's, like, jumping and running some more and more because he runs a lot, the villains are pretty weak for the most part, I would say. Like, I thought the villain was weak in Ghost Protocol, and I thought Sean Harris, who's the villain in this movie, was really weak. And the only two memorable ones for me are John Voight from the first movie and Philip Seymour Hoffman in the third one.
Well, Philip Seymour Hoffman, though, he's just so good in anything he does. He, like, could kill the worst role ever and make it just amazing.
Agreed.
Like in Along Came Polly. He nailed it.
He's so funny in that movie. He's so, so funny. And then I don't even remember who the villain is in the second one. I just remember the slow motion and doves because it's a John Woo movie. that's all I remember. Well, shall we move on to our review this week? Or this episode, since it's not weekly?
Yeah. this is actually really weird because I saw this movie a year and a half ago, and now I'm finally getting to talk about it.
It is weird. But yeah, we'll dive into that. So the movie we're going to be discussing today is called Creep.
All right, we are leaving the flatlands and we are heading up towards the mountaintop. The ad said $1,000 for the day, filming services. Discretion is appreciated.
A yellow door. And realizing that no one knows I'm here.
Hi! Oh, I'm sorry. I didn't mean to scare you.
I'm assuming you're Aaron.
Yeah, I'm Aaron. Nice to meet you.
Joseph. Oh, my God. Oh, my God. This is going to be a good day.
So the reason I've hired you is because I have terminal brain cancer, and I want you to film me to make a video diary for my unborn son. You ready for this?
Okay. Joseph!
This is called an adventure. Woo-hoo! We don't know exactly where we're going, but I have a feeling. When you follow those feelings, great things can happen. Don't ever forget that.
Joseph?
There was about 2 seconds there where it looked like you wanted to kill me.
Joseph, I think I'm gonna head back. You see my keys?
One drink, okay?
Bottoms up.
Hello.
You need to get out of that house right now.
Joseph. Joseph.
Why do you look scared? Don't be scared. It'll all be over soon.
So, Creep, you saw it Fantastic Fest last year or South By?
No, I saw it at South By Southwest last year, so that's hence the year and a half ago part.
Okay, but that's what I thought.
The weirdest thing about it is I still remember every single beat of that movie. Like, it's so vividly clear in my head. And you know how sometimes when you go to, when you go to a film festival, movies just kind of seem to blend into each other, and you forget titles and you forget actors, but that one just, like, for some odd reason, I remember every single part of that movie. And obviously there's only two actors in that movie, so it's not too hard to remember who's in it.
And it's also a 77 minute movie. I believe is the runtime. It's a very lean movie. So I would say it's pretty easy to remember. It's directed by Patrick Bryce, who directed the film The Overnight that came out this year,
yeah.
Which I still haven't seen. I wanted to, but I have not got a chance to. Okay, so we can't comment on that.
Damn it.
Okay. but this was his debut film, and it stars him and Mark Duplass. Patrick Bryce plays a aspiring filmmaker, documentarian, or struggling filmmaker who gets a Craigslist ad, basically, of somebody who's willing to pay him $1,000 for the day to film him, but he can't ask any questions about it. So he meets this guy, Joseph, out in the woods, who's played by Mark Duplass, and says that he's dying of a brain tumor, and his wife is pregnant with their unborn son, and wants to film some of the stuff he does so he can pass it on to him. But things start to get increasingly weird, and things like very quickly, and starts to, you know, you don't know exactly where this guy is coming from, but you know something's off about him, and the wheels start to come off at a pretty quick pace. And it's interesting, and it's a found footage movie. We should say that up front.
Yeah, which I think is one of the best found footage movies in recent memory for me, because I feel like it's funny, which makes it more interesting, maybe.
Yeah, and it's, you know, I'd say your and I's relationship with found footage movies is complicated, to say the least, I would say. And I think that's a nice way of putting it.
Yeah. Well, I'm super masochistic about going to found footage movies every time they come out and then expecting so much and then walking away going, why did I do it again?
Yeah. And I do that with R-rated comedies too, though I have not done that with Vacation. So good, Ryan. Smart for me. But I stopped doing that with found footage movies because until I hear one is good, which I don't usually like to take that approach, but like I've been burned by so many. But at the same time, it's like they're a good entry point for like young filmmakers to get into film because they're so cheap to make that like you can understand why someone would want to make one. But this one's funny and interesting because this is like a nightmare for filmmakers. Like this is a horror movie for filmmakers because that is everyone's worst fear. Is when you're looking for a job on Craigslist that is not upfront about what it wants. You're like, okay, what is going on? Is this person a creeper? Is this an adult film? Like what am I looking for here in an advertisement? And so like this movie is like, I think the ultimate horror film for filmmakers.
And this movie starts off where like, he's like driving there. Then he goes up the driveway and he's like looking around the house and can't find the guy. And then he just kind of pops up out of nowhere. Am I right? Okay, yeah. And then it's just like from the beginning, you're like, okay, there's something not right about this guy. He is really strange. And then things get increasingly stranger, as you said. And like, I think that the one scene where I was like, all right, this guy he's got to go. It's like just from horror movie knowledge is when he's in the bath, like Mark Duplass's character's in the bathtub and he's pretending to bathe his unborn son.
Yeah, he calls it like, a tubby. Like
it's like, oh my god, we need to get the fuck out of here.
It's so creepy and so unsettling, but also so funny at the same time. Like this, it's like, first of all, you know, as much as we'll get into Patrick Bryce's like future as a filmmaker, Mark Duplass is great in this movie, and he's just always such a great presence in independent film because he's willing to take chances on filmmakers and he'll, you know, produce their project or be involved in their project if it means getting them up off the ground. And it's really interesting because he's, you know, a fairly good looking guy and a charming guy, Mark Duplass is.
He's definitely charming.
Oh, I bet he is. I do not doubt that one bit. He's able to play off that charm in this movie because he's able to like easily manipulate the other character, the Aaron character that Patrick Bryce plays, because he is so charming, but yet he gets to subvert those, like, the charms that he has by turning into something really like sinister and like just unsettling, I think is just the word to describe this movie at every turn. Like, I wouldn't say it's scary, but I was just like, I'm deeply uncomfortable watching this movie.
It's an insanely dark comedy. That's what I remember, like, watching it. I was like, okay, I'm laughing, but I feel like I shouldn't be laughing right now because this is kind of scary. You're almost laughing just because you're like, you feel so nervous. I kind of laugh. I think what you talk about super unsettling is the whole Peach Fuzz mask.
Oh my god, the story behind that sounded so, so creepy. And it's like, I never bought it, and that was the whole point, but it was just really creepy.
Which story? Because he tells multiple ones with the mask. I think he tells two at least, right? The one with the dad, yes. And the one with the wife, and the wife is even more creepy. And then you're like, what?
I've never felt so much tension during a scene, and it's just dialogue, because he turns the camera... Or he says he turns the camera off, but he just closes the lens. And so you still hear the sound of him telling this horrible, horrible story. And you're just like, that is the worst thing that I've ever heard.
You're like, oh my God, this person. And this is that. And that was one of those other moments where it was like, all right, you didn't leave the first time. You didn't leave the second time. You got to leave now.
Exactly. But that's what's, I think, interesting about the movie is like it tweaks with the horror tropes, but it still has them, and they're there for a reason. Like, he doesn't leave when he should. I do like that the found footage actually feels like found footage, because it will break, sort of thing. Like you could tell where he'd started and stopped filming again. Like, if you were filling up a card in your camera, like, I feel like it was something that somebody could have found and not edited together. Like, I feel like some of the Paranormal Activity movies are. It's like, this is found footage. It's like, somebody clearly edited this together. and who
we
is
also
sitting
edited
there
some news footage too.
Yeah, exactly. So like, and who is editing this together is the bigger question. I like that it plays with that. I'm trying to think, there was something else I really, really liked about it. Some of the just like little subversions, like there's one scene, I don't want to give it away, but it appears that the Mark Duplass character is doing something like really terrible, but it's on another screen. And then he moves the camera and he's like, so this, I got this in the mail or something like that. And I was like, oh, I thought he was doing something else. and I just thought that was really, really like those little tweaks to it, I thought were really interesting.
No. Yeah. And I thought, like I said before, what I really like about it is that it kind of, because found footage is usually used as just a scare tactic, like jump scares, what have you, Blair Witch style, Rec even. But I just liked how this one was so lighthearted, but it also kept the scariness. And like when people kept asking me about it when it was coming out on Netflix, they're like, have you heard of this movie Creep? And I was like, oh yeah, that came out a long time ago, for me at least. And then I kept saying, like, oh, is this supposed to be scary? And I'm like, it's not scary. I don't think it's scary. I mean, it's kind of like, it's unnerving, but it's funny. It's funny.
Yeah. It's really funny. Like we shouldn't undersell that this movie is funny, and it is weird that it's just now getting a release, or it got an iTunes exclusive release and now it's on Netflix streaming. So I mean, I guess it's technically a 2015 film, but it was hitting the festivals far, far before this.
Yeah. I mean, on Internet Movie Database, it's a 2014 movie. But what I thought was really interesting is that it kind of came out around the same time as The Overnight, which makes sense that he went on to do an actual full, you know, R-rated comedy after this one.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. He's definitely got the chops for it. This person clearly loves cinema, and like this Patrick Bryce, and I honestly think that the house that he lives in, or the apartment he lives in, is probably his own apartment. Like, there's stacks of movies by his TV. And
oh,
it's
yeah.
Just like,
and it's like super barren. And it's just like, oh, yeah, I think a poor film person could easily live here.
Oh, yeah. I've lived in an apartment like that before. So it's definitely apt. But I definitely think he knows the horror movies. He's seen all the horror movies that we've seen before. So he's like, I got to give something different. Because, like, if you think about it, too, it's a slasher film, really, by the, you know, without giving too much away. It's a slasher film, but just takes it in a comedic turn and shows the dual perspectives of the character. Because usually the slasher is just some sort of monster or embodiment of evil that needs to be defeated in some way, shape, or form. And this one, it's like there's actual dualities to the quote-unquote slasher. And I thought that was refreshing for that genre.
Definitely is. And this movie actually introduced me to Mark Duplass, because I hadn't seen Safety Not Guaranteed. I wasn't really, yeah, I guess
you're
I,
not missing a whole lot in there.
Oh really?
No, but if you see some of the movies that him and his brother have directed, like The Puffy Chair or Jeff Who Lives at Home.
See, I knew about those, but I hadn't actually seen them. And what I knew Mark Duplass from when I saw Creep was The Mindy Project. And I was like, the what are they? They're the, like, home wives. Midwives. I was like, oh, the midwife guy. he's at the screening. And then watching that movie, I was like, oh, wait, he's so much more than just a, like, a on and off, on again, off again comedy sitcom guy.
Yeah, absolutely. And he's on The League, too, if we're talking.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, he's a jack of all trades because he's a really good actor and he's also a good director. That him and his brother Jay have done some good films. He's produced a lot of films for other indie filmmakers of that ilk, like Lynn Shelton. He was a producer and starred on Your Sister's Sister, which I think is Lynn Shelton's best film to date. But he just he does it all. And like I said, I really appreciate him because Patrick Bryce is a relatively unknown filmmaker. And so I don't know how they met up, but he was willing to be in his movie if it, you know, was able to get made or get sold somehow. And then teamed up with Jason Blum, because I believe it's a Blumhouse production as well. So he just got in with the right people and was able to make something that was smart and tense and really, really funny.
Yeah, well, actually, Mark Duplass came up with the story with Patrick Bryce, so I'm assuming that they were friends.
Oh, okay, I did not notice that. But
yeah, I just looked it up because I thought I'm like, I feel like Mark Duplass had the story. Cause I remember also because I watched The One I Love as well in the same year. And
which I still haven't seen.
That's good too. It has very similar like thriller aspects. And it was also one of those things where it's like Mark Duplass had the story, but then he met the director and then the director just went with it. Mm-hmm. And so I think that it just makes me think that Mark Duplass is just this kind of like secret movie storytelling genius. But like you said, then he just gives his ideas to all these up and comers and he's like, go with it.
It's great. And then he'll pop up in big movies too, like randomly. Like I think maybe I've mentioned this on the show before. You have not seen Zero Dark Thirty, right?
I have.
Oh, you have seen
it.
He's in it. Yeah, he is in it. He's in Tammy too, I believe. Yes.
Yeah,
he is.
I haven't seen Tammy,
movie.
But you're not wrong.
But it's just interesting that he is kind of like, he's under the radar, I feel, in terms of like mainstream people, because he's not like a household name, but like to film people, he's like a god almost.
Yeah. And he is a very, very good executive producer. Like this year alone, he has done Adult Beginners, The Bronze, which was a Sundance movie, The Overnight, Tangerine, a movie called 6 Years, and he also did Manson Family Vacation, which I actually didn't like. I think his brother was in it. I'm not sure if he actually directed it. But
I still really want to see Tangerine out of those ones.
Oh, I want to see Tangerine so badly.
I didn't know he was involved with that. That's really cool.
Well, I follow him on Twitter, and he constantly is promoting the movies that he's produced or is a part of, which I also think is really great. And so I noticed that he was promoting Tangerine. I don't know. I just think it's so interesting that he does all, like, and Tangerine was done on an iPhone 5. He's really good at low budget filmmaking.
Yeah, he is. He really is. Like they know how to be economic, and both him and his brother, they started that way. And he knows how to give very like naturalistic performance. Cause they were a big at the forefront of the, like, quote unquote mumblecore movement, even though it's not really like a thing, but like, you know, those type of movies, like the first movie they did, The Puffy Chair, stars Mark and stars his wife, Katie Hazelton, as, and they're playing a couple who's kind of on the fritz. And it's like, it feels real, mostly because they are a couple in real life. So the chemistry is just there, but he just has this gift for giving true, honest performances, even in a movie like Creep, where he's the person who you're like, who's a, like pathological liar, you still kind of like, you feel there's this inherent sadness in him that you do feel bad for him until the end, and then you don't. But
yeah, because then at least at the end of Creep, I did not feel any sympathy for his character. It was like gone.
Yeah, no, it was all gone. But you almost feel like, especially those moments before the end, you're like, oh, that's upsetting. Poor guy.
You feel like he slightly manipulates you into like feeling sorry for him until he takes it all away at the end, and which might be a spoiler, maybe not, I don't know. But I just think Creep is just a fascinating character study movie and a fascinating foray into found footage and what you can do with found footage. That found footage just doesn't have to be jump attack, scary, creepy stuff. It could be funny. It could be more intelligent. It's kind of like Chronicles. Like, I didn't know that found footage could be sci-fi until that movie.
Right. I was just about to say it can transcend other genres, because Chronicle did that. End of Watch did that, too, to the crime cop movie.
That's right.
To great effect, too. That's a really, really good movie. And so, you could do more with it than just pointing a camera and have something jump out and say boo, like you said, with the jump scares, because that's what the Paranormal Activity movies all devolved into. Like it was one good idea, and then they all just became the same thing over and over again. Cloverfield, I thought, you know, was good with the found footage too, for the most part, like the one continuous take thing, even though when TJ Miller drops the camera at one point and runs back and gets it, I'm like, nobody would run back and get that camera if this was really happening.
No, and that's also what, like you mentioned, that you liked about Creep, is that like it actually feels like someone's filming it. Because there are points where I think he turns it like off, or he'll like keep it running when he puts the cap on, like you mentioned that one scene. And it feels like someone actually is there filming it, rather than, oh yeah, this camera has to be on because this is a found footage movie and it needs to be on at this point.
Right. It's not just like, you know, it's not in the scene because it's forced. And I think that's what I really appreciated about it. Like, there are moments where you're like, they probably wouldn't really have a camera on in that situation, but 90% of the time it's done right to where I can forgive the other 10%, as opposed to like the other way around.
And I think, like, I guess one of the biggest things that I always think of found footage is like, why don't directors ask themselves enough, why would someone be filming this right now?
Yeah, I think that's a big question that needs to be asked, because, you know, like just study somebody's home movies, because they are not continuous and they're not, you know, edited together perfectly. They jump and skip time and, you know, and places. And that's what I like about this movie, because one scene will be in the woods and the next you're in a diner, and there's no... you don't see the car ride there. It's just boom, you're in the diner. And that's how, you know, that's how somebody's tape, or, well, I probably is an SD or compact flash card now, but you know, that's what somebody would look like, a tape would look like if you were just popping it in from someone's camera.
And then there's a good reason for them to be filming as well, because the guy has obviously hired him to film himself. So you have that reasoning there, and it's kind of ingrained into the whole film. Like, oh, okay, well, he's filming because he has to, he's being paid to.
Exactly. Like one of my first like camera gigs doing a up and coming or a reality TV pilot was like, no, don't get me wrong, I did not have to go in the woods or anything like that. But I'm just relating it to the sort of like filming about it, because I filmed so much at times where I'm like, do I cut? Do I keep filming? I don't know. Like, nothing interesting's going on, but I don't want to stop filming in case something interesting does happen.
Exactly.
So like there's clearly like a reason why he's continuing to film throughout this, and it just makes complete sense, and it works 100%. And when you see, you know, the inevitable, never mind. I was going to say something, but it would be a spoiler, so I'll save it for later.
No spoilers, even though this movie has been out on Netflix for I think a month,
but you know, it's hard to navigate Netflix for somebody who doesn't, you know, know the titles that are coming out, because there's so many. So
fair point. Also, this is one of, I know it was on iTunes, but I think actually is this one of the movies that were in the Netflix deal that Mark Duplass made? Cause I know he made a 4-movie deal. I'm just not sure if Creep is in it or not.
I don't know if it's not in it. No.
Okay. No. But I feel like Netflix does have a huge pull on the movie, and I think it technically is a Netflix original.
Interesting.
I need it to look into that, but I want to say this.
Because the deal he struck was both him and his brother.
That's right.
Yeah. Yeah. So, but yeah. And that's why we started this podcast, really, is not just to talk about the big movies, but these little movies that are on Netflix that people might have just missed out on, even though it is, I don't want to say one of the top horror movies, because it is on my list that it recommended me, but that doesn't mean that it's going to be on anybody else's.
Well, it is a Netflix original, so it might be.
Okay.
I just looked it up. Yeah. And I think it's actually one of the first Netflix original movies that isn't a documentary.
Yeah, that's true. I mean, you have the Cary Fukunaga film that's coming out later.
Yeah, Beast of No Nation. And then Staten Island Summer just came out. And then before that, there's a sci-fi movie called Advantageous.
And then you have the Ridiculous Six, because everyone's looking forward to that, right?
What's that?
the Adam Sandler one.
Oh.
Yeah. I'm being facetious in every sense of the word, but you know.
Yeah, I strongly feel like the Netflix CEO came out and said, yeah, we're still excited to make a movie with Adam Sandler because he had to, and they probably can't get out of the deal at this point.
Probably
like,
not.
What was he going to say? Oh, yeah, Pixels bombed. Well, why did we hire Adam Sandler? We don't know.
I think the best tweet when that deal went down was from Eric D. Snyder, and he said something to the effect of, he's like, it's great news that Adam Sandler is doing a deal with Netflix, because that's one step away from him not doing movies at all anymore.
That's so mean. Poor guy.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't feel so bad.
What if he's actually a really nice person?
I'm sure he is. I'm not
actually, I'm sure Adam Sandler is a really nice guy.
I'm not. Yeah. Sorry, Adam, if you're listening. I'm not describing you as a person. I'm sure you're nice. I'm describing your terrible, like, disregard for the movies you put out.
Just let other people. So. I don't know. Sometimes, like, funny people, I always will say, like, at least he was doing something so different.
Yeah, but I don't. That doesn't count because it's not an Adam Sandler movie. It's a Judd Apatow movie. True. It stars Adam Sandler.
True. Fair enough. Good point.
Yeah. He just needs to keep
starring in movies, but also be a little bit more picky about the projects he stars in.
Yep. Agreed. But anyway, do you have any closing thoughts on Creep?
I had to look up the mask's name again, but Peach Fuzz is like easily the funniest name for a wolf mask.
Oh, and it's so, again, it's just so creepy.
It's so innocent, but at the same time, you shouldn't be innocently naming masks at that age.
Well, and just the mask itself isn't creepy, but it's when he puts it on and does sort of like grind against the door. It's just weird. It's so unsettling. And he starts snorting like a wolf. And it's just...
See, it's creepy, but you laugh because you're uncomfortable, maybe? I don't know.
Oh, yeah. No, I laughed a lot because I'm like, okay, something bad is about to happen.
No, Creep's hilarious.
But, yeah, it's hilarious. You're absolutely right.
No, and I love horror comedies. I think that you get the best of both worlds that way. And usually I find horror comedies a lot more funnier than real comedies.
Which is unfortunate, but don't get me wrong. There's good horror comedies, and it's hard. It's hard to achieve that balance.
Yeah.
Like, it's really, really difficult to do that.
And Creep certainly achieves that balance, but I would say don't go. I know that, like, apparently the trailers advertised it as a straight up horror movie. If you haven't seen Creep yet, it is not a straight up horror movie. Obviously we thought it was a horror comedy. But yeah, don't go into it thinking that you'll be scared.
But anyway, this is our fourth episode of Unspooled Real. You can find this podcast and all of our news, reviews, and everything in between at gotchamovies.com. You can like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter at gotchamovies. This podcast is also on iTunes, so be sure to subscribe to us there. Leave a comment or rating. It helps us know what we're doing right and what we can improve on. And because we've expanded this to include Netflix and VOD titles, if there's a title that you want us to talk about and we find interesting, also send that us. That our way, and we'll definitely consider it because we're pretty flexible about that. Also, if you like this podcast, you can listen to the other podcast I co-host, Over Under Movies, with Octa A.K. Kozak and Eric McClanahan, where we pick one overrated movie and one underrated movie and discuss them. Is there anything you would like to plug?
Go to gotchamovies.com for all the fancy news and fun editorials. Yeah.
Yes. Absolutely. And you can follow both of us on Twitter. I'm at Ryolli90. It's R-Y-O-L-L-I-E 90.
And I'm at Jenny Lee JennyLeigh not going to give you my email. That's it. I almost did my email.
probably wise. We have nice fans, but we don't want to turn them into stalkers, so that would not be a good idea.
Yeah, please don't creep on us.
Yeah.
Total pun intended.
I see what you did there. Well, hopefully we'll do an episode next week. Our next episode next movie we're aiming to talk about is The Gift, the directorial debut of Joel Edgerton, which we have heard really good things about. So we are definitely interested to talk about that.
I thought it looked really bad in the trailers, but then one of my writers, Taylor, he went and saw it and he kept saying, oh, that was actually really, really good. You need to go watch it. And it immediately went from zero on my radar to 100% on my radar because I die for good thrillers. And there are rarely any good ones that are mainstream summer blockbustery. I think the last one I liked was Disturbia.
Really? I was going to say The Conjuring, but...
That's a horror movie, though.
True, but it was a summer movie.
No, but I'm talking like thriller style, like The Gift, I don't know.
Got it.
Okay. Disturbia, kind of more on the, there's not a monster involved. I mean, I don't know. I haven't seen The Gift yet, though, so I can't tell you.
I can't either. I'm still getting over the fact that you like Disturbia. That's
I love that movie.
No, I do not. But yeah, we'll be talking about The Gift, which is currently rocking 100% on Rotten Tomatoes. And you know, it makes sense actually that it's better than we think. Maybe I don't. I mean, we'll talk about it next week. But I forget that he was kind of brought up with this Blue Tongue Film group, along with David Michaud, who did Animal Kingdom and The Rover, and has worked. And his brother Nash Edgerton's a part of that too. So I forget about that. So I'm sure that he is hopefully displaying some filmmaking chops.
Yeah, unfortunately, Exodus probably didn't make him any money to make film, but...
Oh, it probably made him money. It just didn't make 20th Century Fox money.
Good point.
But yeah, that concludes our fourth episode, and yeah, look for our next one, and this was a lot of fun, and as always, thank you for talking movies.
Always, I love talking movies.
Who doesn't?
Crazy people. Creeps. Oh.
Creeps. Keeping it going with the creeper puns.
Can't stop. Won't stop.